Bottom line, John, if you lose 100 grand a day, will it ruin your life? He was like, no. Hugh, if you lose 100 grand a day, will it ruin your life? He's like, well, I won't be happy, but I was like, will it ruin your life? No. All right, then fuck it. Let's do it.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Multifamily Strategy. I'm Christian, your channel host. We are available on podcasts now, so if you're watching on YouTube, no, you can listen to this pretty much anywhere you listen to content. We're joined by none other than David, who is all over my social media feed lately. The man who has the beard I wish I could grow. Super excited to have you on the channel, man.
Christian, I appreciate you. Yeah, this is good, man. I'm gonna have fun.
Oh, I'm glad. Goal for today. I built my business solely by interviewing people who've done the things that I want to do. And so our mission on this podcast and on this channel is to interview owners who have had success, who know what they're doing, and learn from both their successes and their failures. I want to hear a little bit about your story. What does your business look like today? Like, give us the 30,000 foot view of David.
Today, I mean, honestly, a lot of it is content online platform. I mean, my biggest piece of what I do is running a community that helps service members and vets learn about real estate investing, financial freedom. And then on the side, I guess I still kind of invest in real estate. I joke about it all the time because I'm like, dude, I do. Like, I bought a duplex 6 weeks ago. We're supposed to close on 14 houses next week in a portfolio. Like, bought a hotel in December. Like, I'm definitely still doing things. But I try to be so hands-off with everything that it's almost comical for me. Like, we were, you'll appreciate this. This is authentic. We scheduled it to go day drink at our property manager's office yesterday. And they forgot that we told them, hey, we're going to pop in and we're going to, like, my buddy has a 2 o'clock meeting, I guess, every Tuesday. He's like, we're going to show up in person with a cooler full of beer and we're going to hang out because we got nothing to do. And, so we did that. My assistant DD'd for us, and we showed up. And I guess they had forgotten and had, like, an all-hands staff meeting, like, 30 minutes later. And so we were, like, feeding the whole team Coronas sitting in the middle of the meeting. But one of them, while we were sitting there, the daughter of my property manager, who's, like, the office manager or whatever, she was like, you know, we have very few actually hands-off owners anymore. And I was like, oh, I need to get you to record that so I can talk about how passive I am. I was like, I appreciate the fact that I'm one of the few remaining who's like, nah, I don't give a shit. Just tell me whether I made money or not and where I need to go. Like, I want to be as hands-off as possible. And, we're at probably 12 or, well, I guess if you count this, 13 residential units. And then 28 pad RV park, 23 unit apartment complex, 40 unit hotel, and then passively, or I'm on the GP side for all these, but the ownership percentage is so small, it's not worth talking about. But I own probably another 900 apartment units, and then a decent chunk on a GP deal as a 130 unit boutique hotel in Tennessee that we just closed, which is, I'm really excited about that one. I actually am involved actively in the process for that one because it's just cool to me. It's a really cool property.
This is so funny. This happens in almost every episode. I talk to people about multifamily, and there's always like, oh, by the way, I have a boutique hotel. That's what this happened on like the last four episodes. It's like, by the way, there's boutique hotel.
Well, let's see. Did you have Matt Aitchison on, or was it Blake? I mean, who's?
No, not yet. Let's see here. I've talked to Rich Summers. He's doing some boutique hotel stuff.
I was just on his show.
Who did I talk to yesterday? Sam Prim.
Oh, yeah. Financial Freedom Faster. He lives pretty close to me.
Yeah. Boutique hotel. It's like every time. I bought a boutique hotel. That's my stupid tax. I share that all the time.
yeah, I've got one of those that's a stupid tax, yeah.
Not a hospitality guy is what we learned. do the stuff that you're good at. I'm a value-add multifam guy. And I'm the opposite. I am, like, ridiculously hands-on. I am, like, be there at the project, convert a hotel to multifamily, like Class F hotel into Class B multifamily. As down and dirty projects you can do.
So you and I would be friends because you're who I'm looking for. I'm like, and I mean, to be fair, we sold a 15 unit apartment. I sold a 10 unit apartment. I sold another apartment. I sold like 25 residential properties in the past 2 years. Basically everything that was not renovated in the last 24 months, I cut. I was like, I don't want to deal with it. Like, we're moving the money into higher class. So I'm starting to do more, whether it's LPGP, you know, type investing, or if it's, in the case of these 14 units, I came up with, between me and a private lender, I came up with the down payment and the renovation budget, and then partnered with a buddy who's a great operator, and he found the deal. And so I get a decent chunk, you know, of the equity for essentially taking on all the debt risk and bringing all the money, and then he is doing everything. And I'm like, perfect. Great for me. Like, call me if you need me. So
now that's a lesson for everyone. He who has the gold makes the rules. If you are lining up the capital, you get a lot of preferential treatment. Like, the whoever moves the money, even if you're, if you have the money, fantastic. In your case, you're taking on the debt risk. If you're the one on the hook for the money, yeah, you're going to do less. You want to be passive, have more money, or have access to more capital. I mean, that is the rules of the game.
Yeah, man.
I started with a whopping $0. So for me starting, I did a bunch of seller finance to build my portfolio. That's how I got rolling. Did you get started? What did the beginning look like for you?
Yeah, actually, probably not too different from you. It was an FHA duplex that I house hacked. And then the second property was 85% bank, 10% seller carry. And I put 4.9% down. That was a 10 unit. And then most of my deals, I've never put more than 15% down. So every deal I've ever been involved has either had private lenders, it's all been local banks where 85% loan to value is okay. And then it's always either been seller financing, lease options, or private lenders. I was totally broke, and I worked I was in the service as an enlisted dude. I didn't make a whole lot of money. And so I joke now that I'm as hands-off as humanly possible, but I mean, I was buying the rough crap with high leverage in rough areas because I had time and no money. And now I'm like, okay, this is not the best bang for my buck. And I don't have a property management operator personality. Like, I'm just not that detail oriented. And so it's like, I know all the things, but I'll let them all fall through the cracks. You know, like, it could be the fifth of the month and I'd be like, oh man, did anyone pay rent this month? I should probably look for that, you know? So like, I don't need to be involved in that process.
Oh, that's funny. You see so many people who, and this is where I find most people get successful. When you identify who you are as an investor and you don't try to force yourself into a box where it's just not your personality.
Yep.
I have a business partner who's fantastic at math. Not a huge people person. He can raise capital, he can do the deals, but I am the operator in my group. And in my group, I have a deal finder who's really good at knocking out stuff. I have multiple. I'm partnered with a guy named Caleb, a guy named Cody, and these guys can find deals, put them together, and then I come in and do the heavy lift to, like, okay, let's get it all the way closed. And then, yeah, you know, somewhere in the month, we should probably check that people paid rent. That makes bills easier, right?
Yeah.
I find I'm more passive when people are paying. It helps keep the passivity going.
Yeah, I feel that.
Your entire, at least from, everything that I see online, you have a huge, huge focus and passion on serving the military community and finding financial freedom for that. Talk a little bit about your business, your passion, how that started, and where that's at today.
Dude, it all started from, I had a conversation with Brandon Turner. I was asking him how to write a book, and he's like, you should start a blog so you can learn how to write. And I was like, okay, cool. What should I write about? And he was like, I don't know, man, there's a bunch of military dudes buying houses. You are, like, just talk about what you're doing. I was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, and then there was the whole, like, I'm not an expert thing. And he's like, just document it, dude. Document the journey. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. And so I really, the whole platform started as me just wanting to learn how to write, trying to get a few followers here and there. So if I ever did write a book, it would be something that people would actually know existed. And then I would go and I'd learn about something and I'd put out an article on it. And then people would have questions, so I'd write about that and answer that, put out an article on that. And then, you know, and then as the Facebook group kind of started to grow, I'd notice, like, depending on where we were in the market, like, I'd start seeing a million questions on refinances. I'm like, okay, let me write an article about refinances. A million questions about the VA IRL, like the interest rate reduction refinance loan. Okay, let me start writing. And it grew. People found that stuff valuable. And right, you know, like right now, the most recent article I wrote was about VA loan assumptions. And, you know, that's kind of a reference point for a bunch of people in the group. And just random stuff, right? And then one day I was like, oh, holy crap, this is a business. This is not a hobby anymore. Like, I'm paying $1,000 a month to run this show and I'm not making anything on it. And then, oh man, there's enough people here that are wanting to be more involved and, like, you know, whether you call it mentorship or mastermind or coaching or whatever, I should probably help them. And then, it slowly grew between that and a few other things to where working on the brand and the content and everything else and helping those people actually became enough of an income source that I could leave my job and focus on it full time. Now I got a full team and all these other things, but, Life's good, man. It's pretty funny because it was like a total accident, but it's I've also very much a throw shit at the wall and see what sticks guy. And so there's been enough like that didn't work, that didn't work, that didn't work. Oh, hey, I made six figures, like accidents that it's like I should probably do more of these things. And so I've kind of experimented with like almost everything you can experiment with in the, you know, online income world, I guess, except for like selling whole life insurance to people who shouldn't buy whole life insurance and you know, maybe some of the old crypto or Forex scams, but like anything legit I've dabbled in, and half of it worked and half of it didn't. And, you know, and then one day I was like, we're making money. We should buy more real estate with this. And that was kind of the, you know, I mean, I kind of slowed the real estate to build the brand. And then now I'm like, I can buy more real estate. So it's just like this kind of ongoing thing. But
I've seen a lot of people get, and myself included, you get a lot of harassment online, which is fine. Okay. So you talk all about this. I'm building the brand. So you're an online guru, right? What's the difference between being, in your mind, and being a guru and being someone who is selling something of value to people who need it?
Oh, that gets so hard to determine these days. I mean, I like to talk smack about gurus. A lot of my content online lately has been tearing gurus apart. Like, I'll post their numbers and be like, this is bullshit and here's why.
Love that.
I mean, really, I think ultimately in my head, what it boils down to is like, I know that what I'm doing works. It is what I'm doing. Like I think ultimately if what you're doing matches what you're talking about, then like you're good. But a lot of these guys, it's like, they're not honest about, you know, like I come on here and I'm like, yeah, I have about one house in the last little while and it was this, or I'm not the guy doing the things. Like, that's not where I need to be. And you know, a lot of these guys, it's like, I bought 100 million houses on my own with no help because I'm amazing and no money and no time and they only cash flow. I never have any issues. There's no maintenance, no vacancy. And it's like, dude, like for some reason people buy that shit a lot more than like when you're like, yo, I lost $7,000 last month on a sewer line that exploded, or I finished a flip only for the inspector to go in and say, you got to replace the entire furnace system. You know, these are all real. I'm paying the furnace bill this week. So, you know, shit happens, right? And that was a flip that, by the way, I bought the house 3 years ago. And 10 months into the inherited tenant, he was like, they offered me $500 to move out and leave the place as is. What would be more fun is if I ripped every ounce of copper out of the walls and then sold that for $50 so that I could destroy the house. Oh, and by the way, I'll wait till it's a freeze so pipes explode because there's no heat on in the house and flood the house too. And Dave's going to spend the next 2 years and $75,000 renovating a house with insurance. Good times.
I had copper pipes go in an entire 24 unit building. It's a hotel conversion.
And it's, yeah.
Not a particularly fun project. Anything that involves water is pretty much the worst thing that can happen in insurance in real estate.
Yeah.
If it's fire, insurance is going to come in and save you. If it's water, it's kind of a toss up.
No, I'm definitely going to have to go after city utilities for the rest of my money. And I don't think that's worth it. So, you know, to long story short, to answer your question, right? It's hard to tell. I would just say, like, my buddy Brian Lubin always says, the audio's got to match the video. And I think that's, you know, if what they're saying and what they're doing line up, then great. And if not, you question why. And if they don't have good reasons, then I would probably steer clear. Also, I would say if it's like a heavy sell, like, dude, you probably won't. If I'm pitching, it's a joke. Like, I'm like, look, buy my book so you don't get broke. Like, stupid shit like that. Like, I'm very much a, like, here's all the info. If you want the next step, there's a link. Go find it. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. For all those who hate the online gurus, stop buying their crap. I mean, that's, they're making a whole bunch of money because they're flexing. I'm getting blown up by people who are like, hey, this is my yacht. And here's my, I'm like, who's relating to that? That's what I'm wondering. It's like, who the heck's buying this stuff? It's probably the same people complaining that I'm a fake guru. I'm like, I live in a 1,300 square foot house outside of Seattle. Like, I haven't upgraded my lifestyle at all. And I've made really good money in real estate.
Yeah.
I still drive one car. My wife and I share a car. It's a nice car, but I have one. It's like, this is not real estate, at least what I've seen. I'm curious if this is the case for you. You stay very broke for a quite extended period of time. And then at some point it's like, oh, there's money here. But I mean, You don't just dive in and have money. That's not how real estate works.
I have a meme somewhere saved on my phone that I share periodically. It is a dude like screaming into a mirror, and it says at the top of it, it says, "Every day, thousands of real estate investors say affirmations like this," and the guy is screaming, "You're not broke. You're just illiquid." And I'm like, that's real estate in a nutshell. It's like, I have money. It's somewhere. Give me 60 to 90 days and I'll sell a house and get it to you. Like, dude, the number of people I've talked to who have crazy portfolios, and I think the problem is it's addictive. So like, if I got a $100,000 check today, you best believe 100,000 of it or close to would be in another deal. And then I would be broke again. And then it would be like, okay. And I just have gotten to this point where I'm like, I have faith. Money's going to come back, you know? Like, I made 92 grand in January, and it was almost all gone by February, but then it's coming back again, and it's like, it's just this big snowball-y thing that, yeah, it's an interesting game for sure.
Yeah, so if you're spending the money on the yachts and all the other stuff, this is what I've found. You're probably writing something off against your high-income guru business. Mm. If you're not that you can't have the fun car, the fun house as a real estate investor, but if you're flashing all the stuff, you're making money outside of real estate. If you're making money in real estate, you're buying more buildings. That is most typically where I see the money flow for most successful investors. That sounds consistent with how you're living life. Even with your high focus on spreading your message and growing your brand, you're actually doing the thing, even if it's a little bit more passively and you're open about it, which is the main thing. Brian Lubin, he's episode one of the podcast, friend of mine. I'm kidding. How did you guys connect?
We're both in GoBundance and have been for 2 years, but I don't know where we first connected. Maybe a GoBundance event. It might have been through Diego Corzo. I don't know. To your point, though, I just bought my first vehicle ever that I spent more than 12 grand on.
Congratulations. What did we get?
It is I stayed true to my principles, though. It is an 8-year-old car. I bought my buddy was upgrading his Tesla Model X and gave me his for the remaining balance, which was 39. So I was like, well, that's a $120,000 car. It might be 8 years old, but I want those. I want one. So, I paid 39 grand, 39.6. And, I still kind of cry when I see the car payment. Cause I'm like, I haven't had one of these in a while, but.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun. Well, congratulations on the Model X. You've officially made it. You're part of the Tesla crew.
I know. I'm questioning my sexuality already.
That's okay. And I got the Model Y, so you're more manly than I am. It's newer, but I think I paid about the same for it. So I'm going to say overall, you are winning the car game. The two of us.
They're good vehicles, man. They are.
When you are going through business, and you've already highlighted some of the things that you are and are not focused on or good at. When you're playing the game, what's the thing that you feel that you're the best in the world at? And how has that affected your business?
The people side, negotiations and creative financing. You know, so many people, without turning this into a seller financing episode, right? So many people are like, the best way to do seller financing is to say, hey, are you open to seller financing? And I'm like, well, I've done that and it has worked. That is like the worst way to get into seller financing. The best way to get into seller financing is just to get to know the fucking seller and then figure out what they're actually trying to do with the money or how they're trying to, what problem they're solving by selling the house. And then you can put it in, like, I've done creative financing deals where I didn't even, like, the person didn't even know that they were seller. Like, it was just like, oh yeah, I can do that. It's going to look like this. And they're like, oh, that's great. Thank you for helping. And then like, we never discussed seller financing or terms or anything. It was just like, oh, you need this much a month. Yeah. What if I give it to you over this time period? And you know, like you just have to get to a place where you can have that conversation authentically with the seller in a way that doesn't come across as investor guru language, but just comes across as Dave trying to help the seller with exactly what they need. I think I'm really good at the creative solutions, thinking outside the box, negotiations, people, all that side of stuff.
As someone who's built their entire portfolio off of a ton of seller financing, creative financing, I could not agree more. People generally will work with you because they like you and they trust you. And it's not a gimmick or a sales pitch or something you're going to get out of a book of like, oh yeah, you say these magic words and you cast the spell and they give you terms. Like you and you like them. You have a relationship. And if I'm hearing you correctly, you're pretty much just mapping out, okay, here's the playing field and here's the goalpost. And when I know what it is they need, I offer them what they said they needed, and then the deal closes.
Yeah.
Like, what are your criteria on your end? What makes a deal that you want to close? You map out the seller's pieces. What does the deal have to fit for you to say, this is a deal I want to buy?
Realistically, man, I'm looking for 20% cash on cash, at least. Like, I don't think I've ever bought one that was close to that. They've all been much better. But like, I want 20% cash on cash, and ideally as little as humanly possible out of pocket. And so, you know, the nice thing is the lower you put out of pocket, the easier the cash on cash is to generate.
Yes, it is.
But I mean, like the duplex I bought 6 weeks ago, I was zero down. I paid closing costs. It was $3,255 into a duplex that's rented for $1,250 a month and appraised at $110 that I paid $85 for.
I'm going to say that cash flows over 20%.
Yeah, it's great. It cash flows and I put like nothing into it, right? It'll probably be close to an 80 to 100% cash on cash return, right? And is it a home run? Is it going to make me a bajillionaire? No, but you know what? It'll do what it needs to do for a long time and then it'll sell for higher than I paid. And I mean, the best, so to really drive home, I guess, what we're talking about, I don't think there's a world where you could offer somebody, hey man, yeah, I'll buy your shit house for 38 grand, but I'm going to pay you nothing now and nothing for 12 months and 0% interest. How's that sound? That, like, nobody would agree to that. Like, yeah, you got to wait a year. But I have done that twice where really? The conversation was essentially the guy wanted 55 for a house that had a fire. Nobody would come over 25. I got to like 32. I was like, dude, this is the top. And he was stuck at 38. And I realized just very quickly that like everybody's got something they want to get out of a negotiation. For him, it was to win on price. And so I was just like, you know what? I was like, dude, what if I could do the 38? But you had to wait until I sold the house. He's like, what do you mean? I was like, well, I got to flip the house. But if I give you $38,000 today, I don't have money to flip the house, which was not, you know, I mean, I could have figured it out. But I just really didn't like the price. And he's like, so what does that look like? I was like, it looks like you give me up to 12 months to flip the house. If I don't, I pay you 38 in 12 months. And if I do, I pay you when I sell the house. And he was like, but I get 38? I'm like, yeah, man, you get 38. And he was like, done. And so I had to pay $633 in property taxes at closing because he didn't realize he was on the hook for that and didn't bring it to closing and I wasn't going to lose it over that. And so yeah. I paid $633 in his own property taxes at closing. And then I had 12 months to flip the house. And when I sold it, I paid him. And so zero down, zero interest, no payments for 12 months through a conversation that the guy didn't even know he was doing seller financing.
There you go. And you're mapping out the pieces. That's something we've seen. I've seen people do that all the time where they're like, maybe not just zeros across the board for the first year, but like, hey, I need to do some renovations. I need some more cash flow because I'm starting with no money. What if we did 6 months of no payments and no accrual? It's just, you know, payments start 6 months in, and that gives me enough time to get a little reserve going. It's just finding the pieces that make the deal work for you. For me, if there's long-term cash flowing fixed rate debt, I'll buy it. Like that's what I need. If we can hit those boxes and I get paid to own it and the debt doesn't change for a long period of time, it's probably going to make money. I will go ahead and close that deal. That's my box. Meet the sellers in your market. I've found the people who have done the thing that you want to do in your market are probably the best people to learn from. They also own all the real estate. Go meet those people. And magically, deals start coming up. And this isn't – I'm not a cold call guy. I used to do that as a career. I hate that. I have no interest in calling people all day for deals. I don't want to put together a call center of people who are doing that because I don't want to manage a call center. I just go out and meet people who are playing real estate, and I don't ask them to sell me their shit. I just go, how did you build your business? And we get to know each other. And at some point, you do that every weekend. You meet like 52 people in a year who own stuff. Suddenly you start owning stuff. It's not rocket science, right?
The last apartment, to your point, like 100% on your point, and we did not have this conversation beforehand. I just sold an apartment complex because a friend of mine who had bought something from me in the past, and he bought that from me because of I was at lunch with a friend, and that friend was like, dude, a buddy of mine's really sweating. He has 4 more days to identify something for 1031. It's got to fit this buy box. And I was like, well, I was thinking about selling my 10 unit. That's like 10 grand less than I wanted, but if we do it without a real estate agent, done. And so the guy looked at the numbers. 3 weeks later, we closed. Boom. A year and a half later, this guy literally texted me. We were thinking about listing this apartment complex. He's like, you got anything else that's like a project that you want to get rid of? Like, actually, we sent him all the numbers. And he's like, cool. I'm tied up in this thing. Can we finance? Like, can you finance? And I was like, well, I'm locked 25 years without a balloon at 6.5% from my bank. And it was actually 4.7, and then we refied and upped it just to take some cash out. But I was like, if you can give me 6.55 interest only for like 2 years, I'll, you know, what, you know, I was like, we went back and forth a little bit, and we basically come to 800K, 100% seller financed at 6.55 with a 2 year balloon, because he's like, I'll get it renovated in a year and refi. And we owe 480 on it. And so I'm like, I'm going to collect interest on it that's more than my monthly mortgage payment by $1,100. So I'll arbitrage $1,100 for the next 2 years, and then I'll get a check for $800, and didn't put a dollar down, don't care, whatever. Like, that guy just called me and was like, got any deals? I'm like, yeah, actually, I'd like to get rid of this one. I need to do this. And he was like, yeah, I can do that if you 100% carry. I was like, yeah, sure, man, whatever.
One of the things I love about the way you're doing deals, too, is this doesn't take 1,000% of your time. I see so many people when I meet, granted, I stay busy, but I also, I run four companies and I apparently like pain. So I show up at my projects and I do stuff. I'm busy because I choose to be busy. The acquisition side of real estate, where you actually buy assets that make enough money to carry themselves, does not take that much time. Like, people are like, I have a kid and a job, I can't do this. I'm like, the hell you can't. Run four companies, have too many employees, and bought a resort that takes way too much of my time. And I'm building a house in Texas, and I'm married, and I'm doing all the. You do all this stuff. It's like, there's still time to find a deal. When you find an opportunity or something comes up, it doesn't take that long to say yes, is what I've found, if you're just around it. Are you seeing the same thing out there? Like, when you're not trying, deals keep flowing?
Dude, I did a presentation for RubeCon a month ago, and it was on time management. And I had updated one of the slides. It had been like my calendar, or it was like, I had my old calendar on it, and it had all the time hacks for all the things. And I was like, this is actually old. Really what I do now is, I was like, I do Monday for meetings, Tuesday for content, Wednesday for podcasts, Thursday for my mastermind, and Friday for like catch up. And I showed them the new one. I was like, it's much simpler now because I don't have a job. And one of the guys asked this, he was like, I don't see anything real estate on there. Are you just not doing deals anymore? Like, you're a guru? I was like, oh, no, they just seem to come to me. Like, I was like, you know, the duplex I bought 6 weeks ago was a friend. Hey, can you close on this in 3 weeks? I need to get rid of it. Yeah, man, I got you. And the 14, hey, man, I need to find the money. Can you help me? Yeah, I got you. The 130 hotel, like, almost all of this is exactly what you said. Probably an hour or two a week on the phone with investors, things just happen. Or coffee. I had coffee twice this week. You know? Yeah, it's amazing.
This is my favorite episode. I mean, this is exactly how I play the game. There's a ton of creative finance. It's like, you don't spend that much time on acquisitions. You make sure that your deals work. You do the underwriting. You know, don't buy garbage stuff. And if you make few enough mistakes, you end up doing pretty darn well.
Dude,
speaking of mistakes, the stupid tax. Ooh. My favorite question, I think the one that everyone waits for, highest stupid tax you had to pay. Now, this could be personal. It could be monetary. But when you are learning the things you didn't know about doing real estate, what was the highest tax you had to pay in learning?
Oh, you specified real estate, so I can't say marrying the wrong woman. That was pretty expensive.
That is also apparently expensive. I married the right woman, and not everyone has that privilege.
In business, highest stupid tax. Oh my gosh, man! There've been a lot of stupid taxes, for the record. They can all be boiled down to, and this is a quote from my attorney. Hey, Dave, did you know that if you called me and asked me questions before you did things or signed stuff, I'd be able to save you more money? So the highest stupid tax I've ever paid is honestly all the stupid deals that I've gotten into where I screwed myself out of a contract or messed something up here or did this wrong or got into business with the wrong person. And almost every single one of them, my attorney's been like, you know, if you'd called me when you set this up, I could have saved you from this. And I'm like, damn it. So I would say it's either that or it's just trusting people too much rather than doing all the verification. I'm very much a people person. I like to trust. Mm-hmm. I like to whatever. And I learned the lesson the hard way a couple times in the beginning where, like, yeah, they said this. Yeah, they showed me that. No, I didn't verify it. Whoops. Fuck me. Yeah.
Yep. And that – I have almost everyone's had that happen. Like, people suck is most yes. people. There's some fantastic humans out there, and they're so few and far between.
Yeah.
In this business, everyone has a story like that.
Yeah.
And what I found is you can listen to it on this podcast, on every podcast, you can read about it in a book, and you will still make the same darn mistake. Everyone is too trusting, and people do not operate the same way. Even people who have good intentions. Goals change, directions change. No, that happens a ton. That certainly happened to me on many deals. More partnerships fail than not, and people try to screw you over. In addition, I don't think I've ever had a positive lawyer call where the lawyer called and said, opened with, "Did you know?" It's usually, "Oh no, I've done something horribly wrong."
I don't know if it's positive when the attorney tells you how much money he would have saved you if you had called him earlier, but it has helped me now. For the record, the best one of those phone calls was, "Hey, I would have been able to save you $35,000 or $40,000 on this had you just called me before you paid him those final two commission checks when he did XYZ to your business." And I'm like, "Yeah, but he earned the commission." He's like, "He also quit before you paid the commission. You should have called me." And I'm like, "Shit." So I paid out. You know, I feel good about the fact, but I paid like $40,000 in commission to somebody that quit in a way they shouldn't have and did not deserve said commission. But I was like, yeah, called the attorney.
Oh, I mean, at least someone, you know, at least they did some work, right? I mean, it's
those properties then ended up having a whole bunch of bad numbers and costing me a fortune. But
maybe not a good story.
Yeah, it was a good time. I actually ended up paying that guy. I paid him $10,000. This is actually really funny to say. I paid him $10,000, and I have a letter that basically is like, if you summed up all the legalese, it basically says, "I will not use David's name in public ever again, and I will not tell people that I am or was a business partner of his." And I was like, "Dude, I'll give you $10,000 to just never speak about me again." And like, it was like this ugly situation. I was like, "I don't want to be involved or affiliated in any way, shape, or form. What's it going to take?"
I have had that form drafted two times for me. Same exact thing. "We will not talk to each other about each other. Our business is concluded. We will never go after each other for anything, for any reason. We will not get within 100 yards of each other for any reason."
That's how you know you had a great partnership.
Yeah, and you know what? Everyone made money, fortunately, despite them trying to make sure no one made money. They got paid to do absolutely nothing they committed to. and then wanted to go after the small earnings I got doing all the work.
I'm glad someone else feels the pain there. It's good times.
Yeah, I hope this lands for people, because I think this is what's going to happen. If you haven't had this happen yet in your business, you're going to have this happen where something ridiculous happens where you're right and someone else is wrong, and it still costs you a bunch of money. You may or may not actually have a win out of it. And you're going to think back and you're going to go, "I remember when I heard that this was going to happen to me, and now I'm there, and it's okay. You'll get through that too."
Yeah,
I have a $100,000 check coming back, I believe Friday this week, from a deal. Talk about being right. 60-unit acquisition. It was like an $8 million deal. We put together the money. We deposited earnest money. We went in. We signed. We wired the money. Deal was done. Seller didn't sign and then said, "There was one of three transactions that were unrelated that never mentioned each other. Since you didn't do one, I've decided they're all contingent on each other and I'm not signing. Also, I want to keep all the earnest money from all the deals." I'm like, "Well, you can't do that because three different entities are purchasing three different deals with separate consideration." However, Washington State, 18 months in, escrow still holds the 130. So we just settled for keep $30,000, just give us 100 back. I ended up with no properties, 100% rights to all their properties. And I spent $30,000 in legal fees and $30,000 of they get to keep my money to get 100 back. And that was like that was the first time I'd ever been liquid $150,000, and I put 130 down on this deal. I was like, "This is all of my money." And it sucked. It was a horrible, horrible thing.
But just think, you could go sell a course now for $30,000 and you'll be rich.
Oh, yeah. Let's all just be online gurus and we'll be saved, right? No, it's super painful. And I guess my takeaway from that is, if you're going to be right, you also have to afford to be able to be right. And if you put all your money into a deal, I didn't have the money to afford to pay to be right. And I hit a point where I'm like, you know what? I would rather have just said, I trusted someone. I should have put an extra clause in there or something in the contract. My legal team had some ideas of what we could have done better. But it's like, we should have spent more time there. Let's call it $30,000 of stupid tax, and let's just be.
Yeah, my big lawsuit was over $150,000 down payment on a lease option, and it took me 3 years and 9 months to see it through. Granted, and this is why I didn't answer with this one, we got all our money back plus interest because we were right, but it was, luckily I had a partner who had enough cash to keep us in the running to be right. So, yeah. Good times.
You are more patient than I. I hit the end of the thing, and I now am fortunate enough to be in a place where I could afford to wait it out. And they offered to settle and keep money, and I was like, you know what? I'm right, and it doesn't. I don't care. I don't want to think about it. I just want to move on and say, you know what? We were young, dumb. We put all our money down on a deal. I can leave knowing I'm right and just call it. But good for you. Stick it out.
Yeah, if he had ever come to even remotely close on settlement. Like, for record, we were suing for $250 because of like $150 down plus all the damages plus this plus that plus the lawyer fees. It came out to like $250, and we got like $220, but you know, we were like $180 in. So I mean, like, we won $180 plus, you count 4%, whatever. But we were going for like $250, and the guy was offering to settle at like $12,000. So I'm like, bro. Like, if you, and I told him like a couple times, I told his attorney, I was like, if you could maybe not be such a dumbass, we could settle. Like, I want to settle. I've made good offers. But if you're coming in at like 5%, that ain't going to cut it.
This is a piece of the business that's interesting. I don't think I've covered this on the podcast. Stress management. You have the ability to stick that out for 4 years.
Yeah.
That's a big piece of real estate, is you're dealing with real money. You're almost always dealing with other people's money, especially if you're doing creative finance. There's going to be private capital. There's going to be a partner here and there. You're moving money around. You have a bunch of responsibilities. Nothing ever goes exactly as you plan in a real estate transaction. How do you have the – what is it about you that allows you to handle that stress where other people will just absolutely panic because there's something – $1,000 wrong with a duplex? Like, what is it about David that lets
you
do
that? See that? And I wonder if it comes back. It's probably something to do with the Marine Corps, right? Like, I've just been in some weird, I guess you could say, shitty situations for a long time in life. And so, like, you know, for reference, like getting blown up in a truck in Afghanistan, sitting through a legal thing is not the worst thing in the world. And also, in that situation, I had some other things going too. Like, this guy had actually done this, like, lease option kind of scam thing to, like, four other people that I knew of, and all four of them had ultimately lost and just walked and lost, you know, $100,000, whatever. So I was kind of in this, like, I'm a stubborn, stupid Marine, and I'm taking your ass down. Like, I'm getting what's mine kind of mentality, where, like, my attorney was like, plus, I'll be honest, as weird as this is to say, the, like, 3 days in court where I got to, like, go toe-to-toe with his attorney and him in court, that was fun for me. Like, I like debating, and it was basically like a debate where, like, this – well, and the guy hired a divorce attorney, so, like, his attorney would say things, and I'd look at the judge and be like, can I fix the definition there so that he understands why he said that wrong? Like, you know, they'd be like, the guy replaced the roof and XYZ. I'd be like, yeah, no, he said repaired. The big difference in those two words when it comes to a 66,000 square foot commercial grade roof in price. And like, you know, like just a lot of stupid things. And like, it got to the point where anyone who knows anything about legal stuff, the other attorney asked his own client, he asked the judge, can I treat him as a hostile witness? Which basically means, like, he's sinking his own ship. Can I shut him up and make him only able to say yes, no questions? And the judge was like, no, no. If you can't control him, that's your problem. Like, it was a shit show. It was hilarious. But, I mean, I guess to answer your question, yeah, it's probably just you go through some shitty situations in life, and ultimately, like, a legal battle's stressful, but nobody's going to die. Like, whatever.
I love that. And if you're someone who gets stressed out, go find yourself some adversity. Go take on a challenge.
Yeah, or invest passively.
Yeah, or invest passively. Those are the options. Because I find that seems to be the point where most people fail to get started, is you have people who can just handle stress, who can go ahead and sign for it and say, hey, if things don't go to plan, we're just going to figure it out and we're going to battle it out.
Yep.
My wife and I, that's something we talk about all the time. She's like, all right, let's, I mean, that's like our normal thing in the kitchen. Like, stuff comes up. She's like, all right, let's go to battle. I'm like, okay, let's do it. It's fun. I have my battle buddy.
I distinctly remember a conversation. We bought the two apartments and a hotel all in one deal. Mm-hmm. And me, my buddy John, and my buddy Hugh, we needed $300 to take it down. And we got on a Zoom call, and I was like, the end of the Zoom call, I was like, bottom line, John, if you lose $100,000 a day, will it ruin your life? He was like, no. Hugh, if you lose $100,000 a day, will it ruin your life? He's like, well, I won't be happy, but I was like, will it ruin your life? No. All right, then fuck it. Let's do it. Like, we all know, like, the worst case scenario here is we're all unhappy and still alive. So whatever. Like, that was literally the conversation where we said yes. We're like, ah, yeah, okay, we're good. Everything checks out. Like, this is a big leap for all of us at the time, but the worst case scenario is lose some money.
Now, this has been a fantastic episode. It is probably one of my favorites. I like the way you operate. I resonate with literally everything that you said. If someone wants to learn from you directly, where do they find out more about your mentorship program?
They go to thebestpodcastguest.com and they can download a free copy of my book. And then there's also like all my socials and everything else there.
There we go. And yeah, if you want to find out more, also just Google his name because this guy knows how to market and he's easy to find. That's the.
You'd be amazed if you Google David Perret. There's a fucking deer in France called the Perret David deer. And it took me 3 freaking years to beat that deer on Google when you search my name. We have
However,
now, but it still
have,
pops
you
up.
You officially made it. Oh, there we go. David Perret, more popular than the most popular deer in France. It's a big deal. High praise. If you've made it all the way through and you enjoyed this, please like and subscribe wherever you're listening to this. We appreciate it. It supports the channel. And again, the goal is just to connect you with more owners who are doing things that you may or may not have already done. Help move everyone forward. It helps me grow the channel, get it out to more people. So we appreciate it very much. It lets us have awesome guests like David on the channel. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.